In the parable of the prodigal son, we see the reaction of the older brother to the return of the younger brother. I'm Dr. Fred, and you're listening to Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, I'm Dr. Fred. Thanks again for joining me with another episode of Study, Grow, Know. We've been talking about the prodigal son, and most recently we've started discussing the older brother. And we talked about how the older brother had a real problem with the fact that the younger son was back and the father was treating him so well. And for all the older brother knew, the younger brother may have simply waltzed up with a quick, "I'm back," and expected everything to return to the way it was prior to his leaving. The older brother really knew none of this, but his angry reaction tells us that he had been carrying his anger around for some time. I mean, that much is obvious. Now it came to a boiling point, in spite of the fact that his father was actually pleading with his older son to come into the house and join the activities. In essence, it was the older son's turn to disrespect his father, and he was doing so loudly, and he was doing it in front of the servants. He was doing it publicly. Let's look and see what the older son said to the father. Luke 15:29-30 says this, "But he answered and said to his father, 'Look, for so many years I have been serving you, and I have never neglected a command of yours, and yet you have never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your wealth with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him.'" Wow, talk about some pent-up feelings, right? Well, right away the older son starts in by ticking off all the things he had done with his father. He served his father for years. He never neglected a command, never received a young goat to celebrate with his friends. Look, folks, you don't have to have the information on the tip of your tongue unless it's been rolling around in your mind for quite some time. I imagine that this older son thought about all the things he did for his father, and all the times he never failed to achieve what his father expected him to do. He was a tremendous son and very faithful. What did he get in return? Nothing. Zilch. Zippo, not even a young goat, so he could have a party with his friends. It was obvious, to the older son at least, that his father had absolutely no concern for him. Then he starts railing on his younger brother, accusing him of devouring his father's wealth, paying for prostitutes with the father's money, being rewarded for evil with the fattened calf. You know, we don't know if in truth the young son actually had prostitutes. He certainly could have because of the use of the term immoral in the text with reference to the lifestyle of the young man after he left home. We just don't know that for sure, though. It appears as though the older son is simply accusing the younger brother without knowing any facts. Then again, maybe the younger brother had bragged that this is what he wanted to do if he ever had the chance to leave. Again, we just don't know, so we can't be dogmatic about it. We must simply leave it knowing that the way the young son lived was immoral. Now, of course, we see what the older son is doing. He's puffing himself up while denigrating his brother and his father. And at the same time he's denigrating his brother, he's continuing to disrespect his father by taking his father to task for the way he treated the younger son most recently when he returned home. He's basically saying to the father, "What is the matter with you? Are you stupid? You give this son his undeserved inheritance. He runs off and spends it on floozies and drink." In essence, the older son was castigating his father by questioning his decisions. He had become as disrespectful to his father in a different way as his younger brother had been. There was no difference between these two. However, the younger brother, as we've pointed out, learned something that forever changed his opinion of his father. It's too bad it cost the father what it cost him, but in the end, the father had truly gained a son back. The older son, though, was not to be placated. He believed he had a case against his brother and against the father for his ridiculous decision in the first, allowing the son to leave with as much money as he had given him, and second, allowing him to now return as if, hey, nothing happened, no biggie. He might as well have called his father a fool. Well, let's look at Luke 15:31-32, which says this, "And he said to him, 'Son, you have always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had a chance, we had to celebrate and rejoice, For this brother of yours was dead and has begun to live and was lost and has been found. Now that text helps us understand where the father is coming from. Not that he was required to explain it to anyone. However, in telling this parable to the crowd, Jesus wanted them to see the inner workings of all three individuals because they all have something to say, something very important. It was by these three individuals that Jesus wanted the people to understand who God is and how he sees us. In the days of Jesus, everyone would have agreed that both of these sons were initially terrible for the way they treated their father. The father had every right to leave them out of his will and leave everything to one of his faithful servants instead. In fact, people would have quite possibly expected the father to do that, and may have been a bit unclear as to why he did not. Well, the father is going far beyond what he should have been doing here. He actually takes time to explain to the older son why the older son should come in and celebrate with everyone over his younger brother's return. He assured his older son that he knew that the older son had always acted responsibly. He knew that the older son was someone he could always count on to get things done. The father even goes further by saying, "Look, son, whatever I have is yours." What's the father saying here? He is clearly stating that the older son could have asked for a young goat, and it would have been given him so that he could have celebrated with his friends. Why didn't the older son ever ask? Well, he did not simply ask because he did not like or respect his father. The older son completely misunderstood his relationship with his father. And while the older son saw himself as a slave and saw his father as a taskmaster, the father saw his son as loyal and someone he could count on. Why the older son had never asked for anything was not something he understood, but it actually made the father love the older son more. Now, unfortunately, we learn from this situation that both sons turned out to be prodigals, didn't they? The younger son actually physically left his father's estate, while the older son remained. However, the older son was also gone, emotionally. They both had left, one physically, both emotionally. While the younger son dreamt of the day that he would be free of his father's shackles, able to spend his inheritance on whatever he wanted, the older son probably dreamt of the same thing. The difference is that only one of the sons left the estate physically, but both had long ago left the estate emotionally. This leaves us with an interesting question. The young son left and learned a very valuable lesson and returned, humbled, and ready to do whatever his father needed. He was ready to pitch in. He returned with only one hopeful expectation that his father would take him back as a servant. He never in a million years expected his father to react to him as he had done. Though he in no way deserved it, his father actually put a robe on him, placed a ring on his finger, gave him sandals to wear. That tells us how low he had sunk. No shoes on his feet. He heard him give the order to kill the fattened calf in order to celebrate the young son's return. The young son was in awe. He was probably speechless, and because of all this, all he could do was just simply love his father. May even have brought him to tears. He had finally understood that all those years his father had truly loved him, but he was too blind to see it. He had spent so much time and energy feeling sorry for his plight that he never understood exactly how his father viewed him. Well, here he was, the young son, back at the ranch, and he was being treated like royalty in spite of the way he had despicably treated his own father. The interesting thing here is that this entire situation could have caused him to once again focus on himself. He could have begun contemplating just how evil his thoughts and actions had been. He could have argued with his father about the way his father had received him back, saying he didn't deserve it, and he simply wanted to be a slave. That's all he deserved. He didn't even deserve that. Instead, he was dumbfounded, in awe of how much his father loved him. How could he have missed that before? As he focused on the father's love for him, as opposed to how he had sinned against his father, something happened. He began to understand that his love, the father's love, is what drew him. And it's love that draws people and endears them to another. It's not work for the sake of work. It was love that crafted an everlasting bond that nothing could break. Oh, you can bet that this young son would work for his father as he'd never worked. He would appreciate everything about his father and how much his father simply forgave him. How could he ever repay his father for such love? He knew he could not. He also knew that he would never, ever treat his father with disdain again. The young son came home a changed man. He had encountered true and lasting love, love that accepted, love that received. And the young son knew beyond doubt that the love that his father had exhibited toward him that day would not go unnoticed. He would endeavor to spend the rest of his life showing his father how much he in turn loved him. He would glory in it and would actually look for opportunities to show his father this love. Unfortunately, the same could not be said of his older brother. While the younger brother had taken off, the older brother had stayed, dutifully fulfilling all the responsibilities that were placed on him without a verbal question. However, in his heart, the older brother was far from his father. He did what he did with a deep sense of, I have to, legalism. He did it because he had to do it. He completed the work given to him because he was expected to complete it. Those were the reasons why he did what he did. The older son never did anything for his father simply because he loved him. He did what he did because that was the law of the house. You did what you were told. Those were his marching orders. And he made sure to do what he was told. Unfortunately, his heart was so far from his father that he never realized that he could have done those things for his father, not out of legalism, but out of love. Had he done so, his life would have been easier. His load would have been lighter. And the results of his work would have been far more beneficial. It was the exact same work, but with a different attitude. An attitude that would have made all the difference in the world. It was this attitude that was now deeply resonant within the young son, and something he would carry with him for the remainder of his life. Had he not returned home the way he did, while he left in a cloud of arrogance, he came home a completely different man in the dust of humility. So he had not returned home with demands. He just simply hadn't done that. The father's reaction to his son fully opened his eyes to the meaning of a father's love for his son. And I'm talking about the younger son here. Now, the younger son knew that if he had made a mistake, the father would be quick to forgive upon the confession of the son to the father. Now, the son, young son knew that his father was the best representation of God's character that he had ever encountered. His father lived a life of love, and he also wanted to exemplify that trait for however long he lived. The older son went back to the field, angry, alone, and remaining legalistic. He would continue to work for his father, and he would continue to never ask for anything. He would show his father what loyalty meant. He would prove to his father that he loved him, quote unquote, because he would continue to fulfill every one of his father's commands without fail. What the father wanted far more than that, though, was his son's heart. This is something that he had with the younger son, but not with the older. Though part of the family, he was really not part of the family because he failed to understand the true nature of his father's character. The older son viewed his father as a wicked taskmaster and reacted to him that way. The older son saw his father as he was, not kind, not compassionate, not loving. He wasn't that. The older son thought he saw his father that way, but really, it was the younger son who came around to see his father as kind, compassionate, and loving. Let me ask you, which trait is more attractive? Which trait causes you to do things for the Father in heaven? Why do we still believe that as Christians we must toe the line and prove to God how much we love Him, keeping a stiff upper lip and digging in to complete whatever He gives us? I am aware of passages from the book of James and elsewhere that speak about the fact that faith without works is dead. This is true, and nothing I have stated in this series of audio lessons or in my book, Under Grace, is meant to negate that. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you've gained something, and I pray that between now and the next time we meet, the Lord will show you how richly blessed you truly are. Thanks for joining me.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.